My name is Kenneth B. Morris, Jr., and I am the president of the Frederick Douglass Family Initiatives.
And I also understand that you are one of a handful of people who are direct descendants of two very influential people.
Yes, I'm the great-great-great-grandson of Frederick Douglass, and I'm also the great-great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. My grandfather was Frederick Douglass III, and he was Frederick Douglass's great-grandson. And my grandmother, Nettie Hancock Washington, was Booker T. Washington's granddaughter. My grandparents met in 1941 at Tuskegee, which is a school that Booker T. Washington founded in 1881. They were walking across campus and literally bumped into each other, wound up getting married 3 months later. And when my mom, Nettie Washington Douglass, was born, she was the person that united the bloodlines. She was an only child, so when I was born, I was the first male. I have the honor and privilege and blessing to be the first male to unite the bloodlines.
Tell me about when they first told you, hey, look, we want to show you something.
I was born in Washington, D.C., and I spent my summers in Frederick Douglass's summer beach home, which was on the Chesapeake Bay. And if you look back across the bay, you can see the eastern shore of Maryland, and that's where he was born and toiled away in chains as a slave. And I don't really remember the moment when I was told. I just always knew because it was always around me.
Well, let's talk about that, because your work, your advocacy work, did it take you a while to sort of figure out exactly what you wanted to do and sort of figure out, okay, where's my niche going to be here?
It took me most of my life, and sometimes embarrassed to say that I was well into my 30s. And the reason that I took it for granted, that there are many reasons. My grandfather, who was the namesake of one of this country's greatest heroes, was a brilliant man. He was a surgeon, and he always walked around with this weight of expectation on his shoulders to be the next Frederick Douglass. And that weight of expectation became too much for him to bear, and he took his own life. So my mother was born without a father and raised without a father, and when I came along with this dual lineage and being the first male, my parents and grandparents and great-grandparents went in the complete opposite direction, and they weren't going to force anything on me. So I really was, you know, decisively disengaged from this lineage until what I say, you know, Providence called in my life.
Well, let's talk about that.
2003, a good friend of mine, Robert Benz, who's also a founder of our organization of the Frederick Douglass Family Initiatives, you know, he had always been very fascinated about my lineage and thought it would be a great platform to do something to affect change for the greater good. And he handed me a National Geographic magazine, and the cover story was 21st Century Slaves. And I looked at the headline, and I reacted the way I think most people do the first time they hear about the existence of human trafficking and modern-day slavery, and that slavery didn't end with the work of Frederick Douglass and the abolitionists, but it still exists in every civilized and uncivilized country around the world, including right here in the United States. And when I found that there were girls that were my daughter's ages and even younger, and that the average age that a girl in this country is forced into prostitution is 13 years old, having that information, I didn't feel like I could look my girls in the eyes and just walk away from this and not do anything, and especially since I had this platform that my ancestors had built.
And also, prior to this conversation, you and I talked about the fact, and I've done a lot of interviews dealing with trafficking, you are the only second male that I've interviewed that's involved, heavily involved in advocacy for this, which leads me to my next question in terms of, Kenneth, do you see that there has to be a different approach to dealing with this issue towards males as it is with females?
As a part of the work that we do with our organization, we go into secondary schools with a service learning curriculum called History, Human Rights, and the Power of One. And as a part of that education, we talk to young boys about their attitudes towards women and girls, and we talk to them at an age when they're still forming their identity and their character and who they're going to become, and to teach them that choices that they make as young men or adults can feed into the demand side of sex trafficking and certainly can feed into violence against women. And when you can get to a young boy that's 11 and 12 years old, you can really have a great impact on their mindset as they're growing up.
So there's a curriculum that's involved here, but I imagine also you have to have, there's a great deal of sensitivity that has to be dealt with. And also, we all know how some parents feel about just teaching sex education. Are you putting this under the umbrella of human rights? And, you know, how has this curriculum been put together? Because you're talking 10, 11, 12, those very young ages.
Yeah, the umbrella is human rights, but most importantly, it's history. Because of my unique connection to history, people just want to hear about the legacies of Douglass and Washington. You know, these two men that were born slaves, and they were born into the most horrific conditions that a human being can be subjected to, but yet through the power of education and knowledge, they were able to rise up to affect the lives of millions of people. So that really is our entree into the school system, because we can get in and we can talk about this history and talk about the legalized state-sanctioned slavery that we're most familiar with. And then we can transition into this modern human rights issue, and that slavery still exists. And we need young people, we need modern-day abolitionists to do exactly what Frederick Douglass did, and that's to communicate the inhumanity of slavery to the community.
It's an issue for this area. It's an issue for Georgia. So it seems like the most logical question here is, okay, right here in Atlanta, when are you guys going to get in schools?
Well, that's why I'm here. We had several events in partnership with the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. And Deborah Richardson there was very gracious in putting together some events where we had an opportunity to really begin to learn about this issue here and what's happening in the landscape here, and to meet partners and hopefully start to begin to figure out if we can get the support that we would need. And in talking to the people that I've talked to over the past several days, I've certainly found out that there is a need for prevention education.
I have to tell you, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but the resemblance to your great-great-great-grandfather, Frederick Douglass, is striking.
I've been hearing that since I was a little boy, and it's something I'm very proud of. People do say he was handsome, so I like to think.
Kenneth, is this what you're supposed to do?
I think that because I found this mission on my own and it wasn't forced on me, it's much more meaningful. And I never imagined 10 years ago that this would be my life's work. But I have the blood of the great abolitionist running through my veins, and I have the blood of the great educator running through my veins, and it just seemed natural that we would go about trying to abolish today's slavery with education. And I truly believe that I'm doing what I was meant to do.
Kenneth Morris, Jr., thank you so much for coming in and taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.